are listening to 99.1 WQRT LP Indianapolis, and this is Create Here. Produced by artists and curators from Big Car Collaborative, Create Here is your place to listen to conversations with people making intriguing, innovative, and impactful things happen on the cultural front in Indianapolis, Indiana, and beyond. Find out more and access additional episodes at WQRT.org.
Hello, welcome to this episode of Create Here. We're with Betsy Stewart. Her creative practice focuses on themes about nature, collections, and the environment. And her exhibit is currently on view in the main gallery at Tube Factory Art Space. Betsy is the founding director of the Grunewald Gallery of Art at Indiana University Bloomington, where she has curated exhibitions and published catalogs since 1987. Exhibiting her own work widely since 1983, solo exhibitions include La Maladie.
That's okay.
Sorry.
No worries.
My French is very rusty. It's been like since high school.
Mine is too, so don't worry.
At the Mütter Museum in Philadelphia and the International Museum of Surgical Science in Chicago and Veiled Taxonomies at the Center for Book Arts in New York. Her work has been included in group exhibits at the National Museum of Women in the Arts, Indianapolis Museum of Art, and White Columns and Art in general in New York, among others. She is the recipient of a Visual Artist Fellowship from the National Endowment for the Arts. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks, Shate. This is great.
And you and I have been working, well, really, you have been working on this show for a long time, but we had started, of course, pre-pandemic planning this show. So
that's
here
right.
We are after all these years.
That's right. Long time coming, but in a sense, I'm so glad that we waited a little bit because I was able to, I think, kind of get it together, as they say.
Yeah. And I'm a longtime fan of your work. So I first saw at the State Museum. I don't know what year it was, to be honest, but it was like, I remember the work was like one of the pieces where it was like a punch in the gut for me. And then I always have to work backwards and figure out why that was. But why don't we start out, though, by how did you get started as an artist?
Yeah, I mean, I always wanted to be an artist. That was my lifelong goal. And I'm really so grateful that I was able to do it and to do it for a variety of reasons because, you know, you have to make a living too. So, you know, fortunately, I was able to work in the arts for a long time, and I've just been really grateful for that opportunity. And it's really influenced my work so much, working with other artists. And I really believe that that the best way to curate and to put together a good exhibit is to be an artist yourself, mm-hmm. Rather than kind of coming at it from some other entirely different perspective.
And are you from Indianapolis originally?
No, I'm from New Orleans. You know, that's been very influential to me. I really miss it. It's sort of a mindset that's very different than a Midwestern mindset. Although I'm a Midwestern girl now, I mean, I've been here for a long time. So, but I desperately miss the South with all its problems and concerns and issues and everything else. I still believe that culturally, there's just something that's to me intriguing and mysterious about it that I haven't been able to entirely find here in the Midwest.
Yeah, I agree. Half my family's from the South, so I used to spend the summers there. And I've always thought it really is almost like a whole other country in itself. And the, you know, issues of race are very visible, way more visible than here, but also I felt it was kind of a more honest place.
Yes.
I feel like a lot of times the Midwest has the same problems, but it's more hidden.
I agree. I think that all that was very influential to me is how people got along, how they respected each other, mm-hmm. how they, you know, what sort of respect were we talking about? Because, I mean, it sounds kind of corny and like people don't really believe this, but there were a lot of really great experiences with people of all races down there. When I was growing up, it wasn't all just black and white, as was, you know, that's a funny way to say it, but it wasn't just that. It was much more complicated than that. And yes, there was tons of racism and tons of terrible, terrible things happening, but there were also a lot of really great things too. And I think that those things are continuing in the South, as they are here too. But that was really an important part of growing up there for me.
And how did you end up here?
I came to graduate school at IU in 1980, uh-huh. believe it or not. Were you born yet?
Of course. I was born in 78. Okay. I'm going to reveal my age for you.
All right, cool. So I came here. I didn't think I would stay. Didn't know what to make of it all. But anyway, ended up leaving for a little while and working other places, and then came back and got the job here at IUB, and so stayed.
And then, so when you're here making work, and what was the first job at IUB, and what was your work like at this point?
Yeah, I actually got a master's degree in graphic design, and so I worked as a designer for mm-hmm. a number of years, and that's always been sort of influential to me. I feel like it prepared me a lot for working at the gallery, and sort of starting the gallery from scratch, basically, is what it really boils down to, because it was not the gallery didn't exist before I took the job there. And it was just part time. So sort of built it up over time because there's a museum down in Bloomington as well. And that has a completely separate mission than we have. So I was able to kind of conceptualize it and start it, you know, from scratch and build support and all that stuff. Not at all in the scale of what Chate and Jim have done here and by any means, but in its own way, it was not unlike that on a much smaller scale. So,
And how did you go about starting a gallery with the university? Because, I mean, you know, I associate universities with a lot of red tape.
Yes.
And maybe I'm wrong, but, you know, they had to have seen something and really trusted you to create this gallery.
I think it was more by default. Uh-huh. I mean, what happened was the museum was in the space that we're in now, where the Grunewald is, and the museum moved out to their new building, and there's this giant gallery space sitting there. Nobody kind of took a whole lot of interest in it, you know, or decided, you know, like we're gonna start a gallery or whatever. So it just sort of was by default that I ended up kind of starting to put together a few shows. Some other people put together some shows as well, but there was no real organizational. And I think that was at a time when the university you were able to do things that you couldn't do now. It's just now it has become so bureaucratic. It's so hard to get anything done. In fact, that's why I'm retiring soon. So I, you know, it's been great. It's been great. Nothing negative to say about it, but it's a different world entirely.
Yeah. And during that time, and so did you move to Bloomington, or were you living in Indianapolis at that point, or did you ever live in Indianapolis?
I never lived in Indy, okay. But I did work in Indy for mm-hmm. a couple of years. Well, I don't know, maybe it was a year. I worked in Lexington, Kentucky for a while and commuted to Bloomington, and then I lived in, then I worked in Indianapolis as a designer for about a year. Commuted. So I got to know Indianapolis a little bit, but at that time it was so, so different than it is now.
Oh, very. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. So I've never really lived in Indy, although I'm pretty attracted to it. I mean, it's really gotten to be pretty cool, you know, and I'm impressed with what's going on up here.
So at that time, what is going on? So are you, what's going on with your work as an
My
artist?
My creative work.
Your creative work.
Yeah. I was at the time, started to make paintings about the body. They were pretty much based on research that I did about medical illustration. A lot of it had to do with female sexuality and mortality. And that was all sort of started because my mother happened to pass away at that time, and I was very trying to figure things out. And so these paintings somehow helped me do that to some extent. You know, it's never really helps you figure out everything when you have a parent die or anyone close to you die. But in any case, it was a bit on the therapeutic side, I think, but also made me kind of face, I think, some of the things that she had gone through. So those paintings ended up being very, sort of their time, in a sense. They were shown quite a bit, and happened to be the things that I showed at the Mütter Museum and the International Museum of Surgical Science. So they had a particular affinity with what was going on in the art world too at that time. So a lot of things about the body, Kiki Smith's work with out of wax and things like that. So a lot of the things in this show here, you know, those body parts that are cast, those were done at that time as well.
And so can you describe for the audience a little bit about what those pieces, first if you can describe a painting, like what was the, can you describe it for the audience?
Sure. Yeah. Sure. It's all in gold leaf. So they were all gold leafed surfaces. And I was doing that because I felt like there was some, maybe it was a religious type searching or spiritual searching that I was going through to try to kind of make sense of everything. It's really was just about fear and about how little control we have over our lives and you know, our mortality and our bodies, and you don't really know what's going on in there,
right?
Because you can't, you know, you don't know,
right?
You don't know. So it was all about that. And so they were on gold leaf. They were painted in very kind of muted colors, and they really looked like icons. They were iconic mm-hmm. in their way. So I would look at a medical illustration. It was almost always like a dissection or something like that, or some other body part or a section of a body, and then sort of paint from that.
So, I mean, in a lot of ways, it's, you know, there's what we feel within our bodies, you know, especially processing loss and sex. I mean, mm-hmm. I always connect sex and death.
Yes.
And then, you know, what we can see, you know, I think that's always what I have loved about your work and felt with it. But that seems like a good time to talk about the first song you selected, which is Al Green, Love and Happiness.
Oh, yeah. I love that song. It makes me happy every time I hear it.
And is there anything about the song in particular that's tied into your work that you'd want to share?
I think it's about there's like a chill factor, you know. It calms me. That song calms me, and I wouldn't say it necessarily really influenced my work that much, but it influenced me. And also the fact that Al Green was growing up in the South, we listened to a lot of R&B and soul. I mean, that was my foundation, really, growing up, that and country music. But, you know, also crazy rock and roll and stuff. But soul and R&B were it. And so Al Green was important.
You really feel good about somebody. There's nothing wrong. love with someone, yeah. Oh, baby, love and a happiness.
Love and happiness.
Love and a happiness.
Just now joining us, we're here with Betsy Stewart, who has a new exhibit that has opened in the main gallery at Tube Factory, Unearthing. So let's talk a bit, you know, about how your work has changed over the years. So, you know, there are some pieces, like you were saying, from your, you know, from the original body of work in this show, but so what has changed about the work over the years, and what?
Well, let's see. I went through some phases of I was pursuing painting for quite a long time, and that body, the body of work, the first body of work, I think was, I had a lot of negative feedback for that. Mm-hmm. And interestingly, you know, I would get heckled at talks and things like that.
Really?
What would
they say?
It would just be some old guy, you know, and he'd be like, what do you think you're doing with that stuff? You know, that kind of stuff. Nothing serious or anything, but it was kind of surprising to me. And then I think I just kind of worked through it, I think. And my work changes all the time. And I think that's important to me because I feel like if I cover some ground with my work, I don't want to cover it again. Mm-hmm. And so it's changed quite a lot. I went through a lot of painting years, and that was great. I learned a lot from that. I did some abstract painting. I did some all kinds of things for a variety of reasons. I was looking at science. I was looking at all kinds of things. I kind of got away from the body a little bit, but I think I've always been interested in two themes, which are growth and decay. And that is something that kind of goes along with, you know, really it's life, you know, it's what life is.
Yeah.
So I think in one sense, the work has changed a lot in terms of physically, but I don't think the work's changed that much in terms of conceptually. So this new work is kind of getting back to that growth and decay idea that I really, really think is important. And I'm doing that by going to museums and looking at things that are decaying.
Yeah.
You know, I also look at things that are growing sometimes too.
So just with your interest in decay and really with death, did that begin with you know, processing the loss of your mother, or was it even before then going back?
I think it was more, it was definitely with that event, kind of gelled it for me, that interest in decay. Before that, I did a lot of collecting, though. And so that was also kind of looking at growth and the idea of growth. So I would say that it started before my mother passed away, but it's just sort of built momentum over the years.
And there is a collection in this exhibit. When did you start collecting some of those items? Are these going way back? Can you talk about some of the objects in your collections that are on display?
Yeah. I have always collected things, and I was very influenced by collections that I had to make when I was in high school. So I had to make an insect collection, and that was so fun. I had a blast doing that. And, you know, in the South, there's a lot of insects, at least there used to be. And so that was one thing that was influential. Also, we had to make a plant collection. We had to make a fish collection because we were in Louisiana and, you know, you got to go out there in the swamps and find things. So it was fun. So that was influential. I believe that I have always wanted to collect things, but I don't think I had the chance to do it earlier. And part of that was raising children, being too busy, not really just not able to. And so it's only been in the last, I would say, 15 years that I've been able to really sort of kind of getting things, and people have given me things and I've saved them. And that's been great because it really kind of gels the whole idea of looking at museums. And, you know, I'm interested in museums because, I mean, I would not say the gallery is a museum, but it's an institution, and I'm looking at institutions and how do they deal with these things that they show and keep. So I'm sort of mirroring that a little bit with my own little quirky collection.
Yeah. Well, and also I imagine being an artist and, you know, people collecting your work and then you collecting these things. So it must be interesting to both be collecting and collected.
Yes.
And thinking about collections.
Yeah. I mean, I think everybody's kind of a collector in their own way. You know, everybody has some kind of collection, whether it's underwear or, you know, photographs. I mean, we all collect photographs, right? Everybody does. And I think that that's a way of understanding the world and it's not just ownership too. It's ownership, but it's also understanding, and it sort of shows a sense of curiosity that I think is so important for people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, my collections are security to me, and, you know, even some of the more disturbing things, you know, but I think also, was it like there are some like little, there's a little taxidermy duck in there. There's a bat.
Yes.
Which you did say, don't touch it or without gloved hands. And I told also, I was like, don't eat the bat either. I told our installers.
Please don't eat that.
Please don't eat the bat. You might get rabies.
Or Ebola or something. You know?
Yes. Yeah. You know, my son, he helped install it. And, you know, he did like Black Sabbath and Ozzy Osbourne, you know. So I felt
he
the
didn't
need
want to
for the warning.
But, bite out
right.
the bat or anything.
Yeah. And people always ask about the little duck. But there's also things in your collection that you made. And people think they're real. And they'll be like, those sculptures that you made. Uh-huh. I'm always being asked about those. Like, people are a little disturbed by them. Can you
really
talk about those sculptures in the vitrine? I think it's in the case one in vitrine.
I love that. That was what was so fun about the show to me. It's like putting things in that I made along with things that I've collected, you know, and then people not knowing what's what.
Yeah.
I mean, not that I want to confuse anybody, but those are really just little experiments that I made at one point when I was trying to figure out, how do you show kind of I don't know, distaste or they're gross, really. I mean, they really are gross. And they remind me of a lot of the skin diseases and stuff that I would see in a lot of the medical illustrations. And, you know, and I was trying to think, how can I make the surfaces sort of mirror that? And they're just, all they are is wax, you know, and paint, basically, you know.
Yeah, people are very creeped out by them, and they want to know what they came from. They think it's like some natural object, and I then reassure them that they're not real. Betsy made these.
That's great, because, see, I've never shown those, and I made them a pretty long time ago, so it's fun to be able to do that.
Yeah. All right. The next song you selected, let's take a little song break, is Take Me to the River.
Oh, yeah. That's a great one.
What about that song would you want to share?
I like all the iterations of Take Me to the River, including Al Green's, but I chose this Talking Heads one because it's so sad and so, I don't know. I just find it powerful.
Joined by Betsy Stierrett, and we are talking about her exhibit in the main gallery, Unearthing, and we're going to let's talk about place and you with this project. I had came to your studio several years ago, and you have books that you made, and you made them, you were traveling around to small museums and small towns. Talk about how you got started doing that and what was your interest.
Yeah, place is important. I, as part of the way that I have tried to learn more about where I am here in Indiana, southern Indiana, and I wanted to work with, well, first of all, I wanted to learn more. I feel like a lot of times, you know, we work every day and we, you know, we're just in our bubble and we never know where we are even. I mean, and I use particularly bad about that because a lot of people just, they never go outside of town. So I didn't like that. And I thought, I'm going to learn more about what's around me. So New Harmony was a great destination. It's one of the towns that I started to try to learn more about. And I mean, I didn't really know anything about it, honestly, and which was silly. And I'd lived in Bloomington a long time, so I'd never been there. And then I... Actually, that's not true. I had a show there in 1980 or something, or I had a piece in a show. I can't remember, honestly. It's like it was one of the first shows at New Harmony Gallery a long time ago. And I went there and all that. But I didn't know about the Working Men's Institute, which is amazing and so important for that town because it just reflects all the history and all about the citizen science that has happened in that place and how important science was and learning. And that's not even talking about the utopia, you know, the two groups that came and started utopian communities. So I decided to start trying to work with them down there to see if I could come up with some work and learn more about their collection and all that stuff. So that has been fantastic. And I did that over the course of a couple of years, and they were able to let me into the collection and work with things, which was amazing. So I did learn a lot about it, and I mostly was interested, not necessarily in the utopian nature of the community, but it was in the way that people in the community were so interested in preserving some of their history by giving these items to the Working Men's Institute. Mm-hmm. So the Working Men's has a combination, of natural history items, but obviously a lot of documents and all kinds of things about these communities. As Shawtay knows, you know, I mean, you did a huge project there, and you know probably much more about it than I do. But the only thing I know about it is, what's, you know, what are the natural history items in there? Who are these people that gave things? You know, why did they give things? I think that's interesting. So there was this whole sense of we want to be part of this learning community. And I love that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's a, you know, going back to the themes that you're working with, museums and collections are also a form of immortality. You know, so to gift something, you know, to these collections and to be deemed like worthy of it is really something. And so were there stories that came with some of the objects as to why they donated them? And, you know, are there any pieces of the Working Men's Institute that really stand out? And one of the gallery walls features photographs that does feature photo documentation of the archive that you were in. But what pieces stood out for you that, and what did you feel interested in or connected to in that collection the most?
Yeah, there were a few items that had tags and labels. There's actually one photograph in the show that has a few of the little handwritten sort of notations about some things that were donated. So I believe one of the tags has something about birds' nests that were given by a farmer, or, you know, I don't remember specifics about the notations, but there were quite a number of those in the collection that I thought were just as important as the objects because they really tell that story. The other things that are in the Working Men's, that it's hard too because they've redone a lot of the collection, a lot of the displays, and, you know, I think that's what happens then is that sometimes information gets lost, and I find that sort of bad.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I know people don't like to go to these old Victorian museums where everything's falling apart. On the other hand, I love them personally because to me they're more authentic, and they're more, rather than a sanitized version of what what the place was. And so I'm hoping that the working men's is not going to be cleaned up too much, because those notations, those placards and things that they put with the displays are, every time they redo them, a little bit of info is lost. Yeah. And so it's sad. So I'm going to actually be there on Saturday. I'm going to a opening of a friend of mine at the New Harmony Gallery, and I'm going to go to the working men's and see what they've done to it. Hopefully nothing.
Yeah, I love that about these small town museums too. There are a lot of stories, and I think it's the same reason or along the same lines of why I like dive bars better than a hotel bar or a new bar. The nice thing about these museums is that they reflect the personality of the town in a way.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
I know. I've really enjoyed doing that, going to places. I'm trying to think of some others. Well, have you ever been to the Red Skelton Museum?
No. Is it good?
No. You got to go to that. That's in Vincennes. Uh-huh. You know, Red Skelton was a big... I know people listening to this are not going to know who Red Skelton is, but...
Google it.
Yeah, look it up. Anyway, he's a famous Hoosier, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, there's a museum there. That's worth visiting. You know, so these quirky little museums like that are fascinating. And I believe you told me about a couple that I... still haven't been able to go to that I wanted to go see. And then there's a James Dean Museum somewhere. There's a and then every town has a history museum. And the history museums are incredible. I mean, they really are. What's the one in I think it's not Huntingburg. It's in, I don't remember. Anyway.
Yeah.
They all have amazing artifacts. So
I went to a few during the worst of the pandemic. Some places were still open, but unfortunately, that whole time is such a haze to me that I almost feel like it's a foggy area that I blocked out. So even like names and places are obscure to me, which I should have probably looked up because... some of these museums, because I did go to a few during that time. But
I know exactly what you mean, because that whole time is a blur. Everybody I talk to, it's the same. Nobody remembers anything.
Yeah.
It's just so weird to lose like 2 years.
Yeah. And exactly.
So I don't know.
Well, let's go to our next song, The Dead Can Dance.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one, too.
To keep watch over me, to protect me from myself, so I can wear honesty like a crown on my head when I walk into the promised land. We've been too long, American dream. We've all lost the way. Fair long song now, nihilistic, maniacal in the dark. I'm in love with an American girl. Well, she's my best friend. I love her surreptitious smile that hides the pain within her. And we'll go dancing in rings of laughter that need along by the shores. Fill along in the rounds of rapturous leaving long for the Lord. On a leader, eyes and wind blows.
Welcome back. I'm here with Betsy Skirit, and we are talking about her exhibit. Are there any elements of climate change or ecology or that you're addressing with your work? It feels that way to me, even if it's not spelled out.
Yeah, it is about climate change in some respect. It's not overtly about climate change. It's about appreciation. Appreciation is, I guess, really kind of a lightweight way to, lightweight theme to address, I guess. But I definitely think we need to think about what we have more. We don't do that. And I mean, it's not just the environment. It's everything. Mm-hmm. People are so unappreciative of what we have. And I mean, I'm a person who has things, so it's easy for me to say, you know, so I'm not trying to act like there isn't a reason why people are unhappy. I completely understand it. We have so many problems in this country, and especially, I don't know, I can't go into it all, but in any case, I do think that the environmental nature of the work is really a sense of appreciating the nature that we do have around us and trying to preserve as much of it as we can.
There are in the exhibit some historical sites, that photos printed on paper and then seemingly crumpled. Can you talk a bit about those?
Yeah, those are pictures of or images of Native American sites that are primarily in Indiana, but I've done some traveling up and down the Mississippi River, and so more toward where I'm from, into Mississippi, the state of Mississippi, and places like that where there's a lot of Native American sites. And I felt compelled to photograph these sites for a variety of reasons. I wanted to, first of all, hope that people will appreciate them also for what they are and to respect them. I think the respect is important. Also, that, I don't know, I'm trying to, I'm actually really having a hard time trying to understand exactly what I'm doing at that work, mm-hmm. to be honest, mm-hmm. because it's completely new. Mm-hmm. And I know that it's not about beauty. It's about loss. It's about taking an image and making it into an artifact, which is what the crumpling is, and changing sort of the way that we view things. I think that's kind of all I can say about it right now. Mm-hmm. But I know that I'm going to be doing more. So
yeah,
I'm not trying to make a statement on Native American feelings about their own sites, because I'm not one and I can't do that. That's not what I intend to do. I'm looking at it as an outsider. And mm-hmm. so I'm well aware that as an outsider, I can only communicate certain things about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Going back to what you were talking about and this idea of comfort too, you know, I did read the other day that comfort is a new concept, you know, that comes with becoming industrialized. You know, it wasn't, you know, to have a comfortable bed or a pillow or all these things, you know, didn't exist probably around 90 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you lived, you know, especially when you go to these museums, these historical museums, there's like rope beds. People had bed bugs. You got to shower like once a week. So it's interesting to me to think about, you know, also that show in that way and how we've changed and, you know, collections and comfort and death and what it means to collecting as a comfort too, you know, in a lot of ways. Do you feel that way about the work?
Yeah, I think collecting is a comfort to the individual.
Yeah.
Collecting is so problematic in terms of the institutional, because of all of the history of the way things are collected and or seized or, you know, who has ownership of what. And so that is a whole gigantic issue that, I mean, we hear about it every day. And I read about it every day about how one museum or another has, you know, just for instance, today in the news about how many museums have still have Native American artifacts and, mm-hmm. and remains.
Yeah.
And they haven't had to repatriate any of these for some reason, and I don't know why. So it's a hugely problematic effort, really, for museums to do this. I mean, that's not even talking about all the things that are that were seized by all the, European Europeans over the years and all that stuff. I mean, so I think I'm well aware of that, and that's why I don't think collecting on an institutional basis has anything to do with comfort. It has to do with sort of colonizing.
Yeah. But they feel a right to. They feel comfortable doing mm-hmm. so and not returning the remains or even, you know, the land. You know, the
land.
You know, those are historical sites that are owned by the state. That are in the show too.
So, exactly.
You know, I think that, you know, these, we feel like we have a right to, you know, the state feels like it has a right to own this land. These museums feel like they have a right to own bodies mm-hmm. or objects of importance, of spirituality, objects they don't even understand what they mean sometimes.
Exactly.
So that's, and museums, you know, they started out as a cabinet of curiosities.
That's right.
Yeah. So kind of like what, that's how the exhibit feels to me, which of course, you know, I can't help but enjoy. Like, I love being surrounded by these objects and then going in and maybe like coming up on one, and it's different each day. You know, living with that exhibit is different for me each day as a curator or as a curator. I didn't really curate this exhibit. I didn't need to because you had all the
Maybe you should have.
No, I wouldn't say I was a curator of this show, but I like living with it, and I chose it because I always wanted to work with you.
Well, can I mention one thing? I think it is. I've had a lot of mixed feelings about some of these things in the show, particularly the photographs of the Native American sites. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm like, do I have a right to do this? I don't know. And that is something that I grapple with. On the other hand, there is a connection of that to my own childhood and my own love for just history and mm-hmm. just like, where did we all come from? And maybe I don't have a direct lineage, but those are the kind of sites that I would go to as a child. And my parents were constantly taking us to, oh, I don't know, Civil War forts and, you know, Native American mounds and, you know, all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And so to me, it seemed like a natural kind of connection to my interests as a collector, in mm-hmm. a sense that I'm collecting that experience of going to those places and you know, you're collecting photographs of them. So it's not collecting the thing, but it's collecting the experience of being there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, I'm multiracial and, you know, I don't have, and my grandfather was Cree and Cherokee, but I don't have tribal affiliation. I always feel like I have no people. So it's like a weird, so I understand what you're saying on some level where you don't ever feel like you can, I mean, I can't speak for these things. I'm I'm on the border of it, and I'm part of it in a way. And you're part of it. We're all part of these issues and, you know, the land back movement and with what's going on there. But I think there's a lot of pressure on artists and curators to speak as an expert on things or to speak for a group of people or to, you know, but no community of color is a monolith. And then we all experience these objects and these sites our own way. And so I just think that the galleries and music, like at least what I try to do with my work as a curator and director of exhibitions is go on explorations with the artist, and we don't have to be right all the time or understand all the time, because it's more or less learning together and as an individual. So that's, I mean, I thought that, you know, I didn't recognize every historic site that you had in there, but they were crumpled up, and I really did feel attracted to those pieces because it is getting into some uncomfortable territory, which I don't think it's bad for. I don't think it's bad to venture into. I think it's important, and that art is a good way to think about and process these things. It doesn't mean we're going to solve it, but I think it's important to think about.
Yeah, that's good. Well, I agree with you. I mean, I think now being so aware of what's going on with artists having to justify everything that they do, I think it would be kind of a breath of fresh air to kind of move a little bit away from that.
Yeah, I definitely don't move into it at all. That being said, I do try to be able to defend every artist that I'm working with if I need to, you know, and I have had to at times, you know, when you were talking about being, you know, basically the man trying to shame you publicly at your artist talk, you know, that happens sometimes in the gallery. People get upset about the things that they see at times. But I think that's important work. And I think it's an important position to be in and to be present and let the person be upset or angry or, you know, but it does come back on them. What is it like for you, you know, because also things have changed a lot for, you know, as and I think, you know, it can happen, you know, being a woman artist, you know, and you get put in female group shows, you know, this is a group show for women artists or, you know, so there's this, any community, except probably white males, can be tokenized at this point.
Yeah.
You know, and then how do you feel? How has that been being a one? Because it is a whole different thing. You know, museums, as I'm sure you know, probably about 2% of their collections are women or artists of color.
Right.
And a lot of times that's grouped together. So then you have women and artists of color grouped together being 2% of an encyclopedic museum's collection.
Exactly. Well, hopefully that's changing, but I don't think it's changing that quickly. And I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the next 5 years, 10 years. Will this interest in people of color's art be maintained? And I think that's going to be fascinating to see. I don't think women have really benefited much from anything. Honestly, I mean, there's still, I don't feel bad about any of it, but I definitely would be happy if I was never invited to be in another women's art show, if, you know, because I just really don't believe in them. And it's kind of unfair to women artists, you know. You're just an artist. You're not a woman artist, really, you know.
Yeah, it's a very, I don't feel like things have progressed much for women in terms of treatment or expectations, because you can't, and it's, I mean, maybe it's probably happening slowly, but it's not going to change during my time here on Earth, I don't think. Mm-hmm. You know, I get, I don't know if this is how it is for you, but I'm like, Kim Kardashian gets famous from a sex tape that her mom like was like, let's do this. You know,
that's not helping anything.
It's not helping anything, but it's still what people respond to. And I think it's still put on female artists working in the visual art world for sure, too. You know, there's, you know, they love and hate when you go into the sex and death body realm as an artist.
I know. Yeah.
Which I'm sure you can speak to.
I can definitely speak to that. I don't. They're like, oh yeah, okay, yeah. That again, of course, she makes work about that, you know. And I mean,
then they want it.
It's so true. I do think, though, that I think women artists in the more blue chip realm have been doing better. I mean, when you look at the commercial art world, you know, there's some women who are doing really well and a lot more than there used to be. And so that's encouraging, although that's the commercial art world. And you know, as we all know, that the high-end people and the middle ground is gone pretty much in terms of artists that were sort of doing okay, but not really blue chip. Mm-hmm. Those are sort of that doesn't happen much anymore. I think it's mostly everybody else is down here. Mm-hmm. And then you've got your superstars who are doing great with some of the galleries, you know, representation and stuff, you know, some of the
kind of like how we're losing the middle class.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's like the disparity. I think it's reflecting it in the art world too.
So true. That is exactly right. And so that's kind of interesting. But
yeah. Well, let's go to Lori and John. Do you have anything to say about this song?
Oh, yeah. This is my brother and sister, who are twins, and they made an album together, and it's about, their album's called Arabella, and this song is about one of their, mostly my sister, who's in a band called Blue Mountain. I don't know if anybody's ever heard of Blue Mountain, but they're more country, and John is in Wilco, so we will let them, this is influential to me, because I love you.
Dead on your feet and so lonely. You'll remember the words we said, I know. We'll meet again somewhere on down the road.
Do you see it as one piece or separate works? Would you sell it? Would you sell certain things but not others? How do you, like, in terms of thinking about, because before we took that break, we were talking a little bit about basically capitalism and the art world.
Yeah. I see this as a installation. There are pieces that could be sold, I suppose. I really honestly don't sell work very much right now. I used to sell more, I think, when things were more, I guess, I don't know, commercially viable. My work isn't really that way right now, and it doesn't matter to me, really, honestly. I want to have this experience that I've had here at the Tube Space, because this is, to me, the ultimate. It's like you get to try something, and you get to present something to the public that is a long time in planning, and maybe has some experimental aspects to it, and maybe has a way for you to kind of think about the work differently. And that is, to me, the goal of my work, is to be able to do that, and then to try to, I mean, sometimes you have to figure things out after it's up on the, you know, it's installed, and that's exactly what I'm hoping to do from this. So I see it as just another step toward maybe doing another one of these things somewhere, you know, and that it's going to be completely different. It might not even be about collecting, who knows, you know, because I see it kind of going off into another sort of place. I've been experimenting a lot with aerial photographs and maps and things like that, which really have a lot to do with place. So I'm kind of looking, still looking at place. And you know, I believe what I'll do is make some works that are about key places that are important to me. And they're going to look pretty different than anything in this show, I think.
Oh, that's exciting. Do you think you'll head south for that? Like, are you looking more in the south to go back to your roots? And
yeah, definitely. Road trips are really important, you know. You're a road tripper too.
Yes.
I know that. Yeah, and you know how it is. It's so critical to kind of get on the road and just be out of your element and see things. So I'm planning a couple of trips that'll be more driving down through Mississippi and to go to more of these Native American sites. There's lots of them, and there's a lot of them that haven't been excavated yet, mm-hmm. or even, you know, are very obscure places that I really like going to those kinds of places. There's one called Windsor Mounds that's amazing. And it's in Mississippi, kind of close to Vicksburg and that whole area that I hope to go to again. And just different places. I really like places off the beaten track. So mm-hmm. I'll be doing that. Not really so much things that have already been kind of, I don't know, touristy, tourist mm-hmm. sites, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Then do you believe in life after death?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I mean, to some extent.
Yeah.
I don't think you're completely gone.
Yeah.
I really don't. You can't be, because you live on in people's memories, first of all. And so, you know, like, yeah, it's definitely, I don't entirely not believe in ghosts or anything like that. I think there's auras and things and, you know, there's things out there. You have to believe in it, because if you don't, then, I mean, it's part of being curious about the world, you know, and to me, that's everything. If you're curious about the world, that makes life worth living.
Yeah. So. I mean, that's in part why travel is so important. Travel is really about learning.
It really is. And once you want to stop learning, then, you know, why?
What's the point after?
What's the point?
What's the point?
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. So we're on our final song. The Pogues.
Oh, yeah. I love the Pogues. It was my connection to Ireland. So, and I love this song because it's so sad and grit.
Well, you can see Betsy's show at Tube Factory Art Space, 1125 Cruft Street. Hours are Wednesday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m., Saturday and Sunday, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. You can find more information on our website, www.bigcar.org, /events. And Betsy, what's your website for people to look up your work?
Oh, yeah. It's BetsySteerit.net.
And Steerit is STIRRATT.
That's right.
Two R's and two T's.
Two R's and two T's. Got to make it complicated.
But Betsy is just one T.
That's right.
All right. Well, thank you. And we'll end with that song.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate
thank you.
It.
Gently laughing and the